Hello and welcome to the Swim Brief. I am Chris DeSantis, and here on the Swim Brief, what we typically do is we discuss things that I've been thinking about in my coaching, things I run into out in that wide world of coaching, and I have a very special episode today. First, I want to say welcome because I plugged my podcast at the thing that I was at over the weekend, which is the Gulf Swim Coaches Clinic down in Galveston, Texas. So if you're listening for the first time after that, welcome. I'm very happy to see you. And I got a special treat for you because I gave a talk on a sleepy Sunday morning right at the end of the clinic. I had an amazing time doing it. Great conversation with coaches afterwards. This is going to be kind of like the bonus tracks of that cut. Don't worry if you're a podcast listener. I will summarize how we got here. And if you're a frequent podcast listener, I think a lot of the things that I talked about in front of the audience, that stuff's going to be familiar to you. So when I catch you up, you should have an idea of where we are. And, you know, every time I'm doing something like this, every time I get up in front of an audience, and in this case, I spent a lot of time re-editing, rethinking what I was going to do, partially even influenced by what I saw at the clinic over the weekend, and I'll talk about that as we get into this a little bit. And then I talked for an hour, 30 minutes of conversation with coaches afterwards, and I'm like, you know, on a four-hour flight back from Houston to Philly afterwards, and I'm thinking, oh, I wish I talked about that, and I wish I talked about that, and I wish I talked about that, and I wish I talked about that more. And so this is an attempt to fill in some of those gaps where I see them, because you never have enough time to just get into everything that you can possibly get into. But before we do that, let me give you a summary and we'll expand from there. Let me just talk about the event in the first place. This is a spectacular LSC coaches clinic. I feel really privileged to be a part of it. I think Julie Bachman, who is the executive director of Gulf Swimming, you can see her sort of blood, sweat, and tears poured into this. And when I talk to coaches from other parts of the country and I tell them what this event is all about, they're pretty jealous because, in essence, you have a really high quality clinic, you know, merged in with some of the other business meeting kind of stuff that you might have to do on a yearly basis, and it's in a nice, fun to visit place. So I think it's perfectly timed. It's right here, sort of as we turn the page from short course to spring season. I know there's you're never going to find a time that satisfies everybody, but I think this has really, really good timing. And I think it's obvious that Julie puts a lot of effort into it, and she puts a lot of effort into who comes and speaks at this. So just to give you an example of a few of the people that were there presenting, one of them, Steve Magnus, and I have a lot of friends that are giant Steve Magnus fans. He's a former U of H track coach. You probably know him. That's University of Houston, for those not in the know. I guess I've visited down there enough. I'm using the local lingo, but he's also the author of a couple of books, which I will not remember the name of off the top of my head. Do Hard Things, I think, is the most recent of the two of them. Very well selling books about coaching, and just generally a guy who is putting a lot of work into interpreting something that I'm really passionate about, which is interpreting science, interpreting sports science, and actually making it applicable to what coaches do in real life. So, I was talking to somebody on my way down there who said, like, oh man, we were trying to get Steve Magnus for what should be a much more high profile conference than this one. And so it speaks to the effort that they've put into this, that they were able to get somebody who's in such demand. You know, luckily he is geographically close there. Another presenter, actually, in my opinion, the best presentation in the entire weekend is somebody I've had on this podcast. And I actually think she was a lot better in her presentation than she was on this podcast. Maybe that says something about my podcasting skills. I need to step up my game. But Abby Lou, coach of Bellevue Swim Club, she was outstanding. Both from a perspective of, you know, as she talked, as she introduced herself, and you get to hear her story and some of the parts of her story that she wants to tell to set up. We were there nominally to talk about season planning. I really, really just enjoyed listening to her. I love her energy. And, you know, what I really respect about her was that, yeah, she was there to present and she was there to share her coaching knowledge. And she's a really high profile and really accomplished coach. But she also came and sat in on other stuff and just mixed it up with the other coaches. You know, this is not her LSC. It was not necessarily something that she had to do. But I really respect somebody that, you know, is like, hey, I came out all this way. I just want to learn too. And I thought that Abby really brought that attitude. So Abby Lou was an absolute highlight of the weekend for me. And then another guest I've had on this podcast, Dr. Megan Cannon. She was all over the place on the weekend. And I just think she provides really high quality sports psychology content, and I'm a fan. And it's always a pleasure to see her as well. So it's a really, really cool clinic. If you're not in the Gulf, sorry, you're missing out. But you know, maybe it'll give you some inspiration within your own local community that, or your own LSC, that something like this is possible, that you could be doing something like this. And I personally, you know, think that there's a lot of value in having events like this and getting everybody together and sharing ideas and learning and getting high quality content, right? I think we've all been to coaching clinics where we feel like the content is not really up to snuff, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I gave a whole weekend and I paid all this money, you know, for the event, I paid for the hotel, you know, like, oh, like this is really good. And so what did I present on? Let's get to that piece of it. What did I present on? Well, I would say the gist of mine, and I'll leave out the biographical details that I gave at the beginning, because if you've listened to this podcast for a long time, you've heard it. If you're new coming from the Gulf, you know, you heard some of that stuff as well. But, you know, I was speaking to, and I said that I changed some of this based on what I heard at the weekend. I was speaking very much to a sort of state of the sport and where we are with our conversation around mental health and sports. And it strikes me that the conversation we are having as things have gotten heightened, as there's become more awareness of mental health, that there's more conversations around mental health, the way in which we're having that conversation has a lot of room for improvement. And I wanted to zero in on one piece of it, because I think that the way that the conversation has gone and is going has put coaches into a really reactive space. And that's not what coaching is about. Coaches are proactive. Okay. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is, you know, if you think about what role a coach plays as it relates to the physical health, and you can't extract physical health and mental health, they're not separable from, is that a word? You can't separate them from mental health. But if you just your sort of whatever you conceive of as your physical health, right? Like how your joints are doing, how your muscles are doing, injuries, etc., right? You have somebody that gets an injury to their shoulder. Well, they're going to go, you know, see an orthopedic surgeon, a sports medicine doctor, a physical therapist, right? They're going to go see some specialists that are trained in how to react to injury. Right. And those people are super valuable because injuries happen. We're not going to be able to create a world in which injuries do not happen. Okay. But it's not really the coach's role, right, to develop a rehab plan or to manage that return from injury. Okay. What coaches do spend a lot of time doing is, hopefully, if you're good, you spend some time thinking about, okay, I want to train people, I want to push people to their absolute maximum in training without obviously injuring anybody, because, you know, it sucks for people to get injured. It has all sorts of knock-on effects that are really hard for what you're trying to do. But it also just shows deficiency in sometimes in how you've set things up, right? That you can really just like muck things up by having an idiotic training plan or not being competent in teaching people how to swim properly so that they're doing really dysfunctional movements and they're repeating those movements thousands of times, and that's contributing to injury down the line. But right, the role of the coach is really on, if we go back to like what Abby Liu was presenting on, right? She was presenting on season planning. And the idea, I've spoken to this a number of times, is that also with mental health, and I think we're going to get here, hopefully, more and more, is that people develop a season plan around that, right? That people actually think of proactive solutions instead of like, oops, people on my team are really distressed by competing, really distressed by training, and it's injuring them to do those things, and we got to go find somebody to fix the problem. And I, you know, I cited a number of high-level examples that I've talked about on this podcast, but like when you look at the high-level competitive landscape, you know, the perception for a lot of us, and I'm not saying that their coaches were not proactive, by the way. I don't know that their coaches were or were not proactive. So don't take any of this as a statement, but just the conversation that we're having afterwards is like, everybody thinks, hey, Caleb Dressel's great. He's like, you know, everything's going really, really smoothly. And then he's like, I can't do this anymore. I need to take, you know, a year plus off. Christoph Milak, Adam Peaty, okay, Simone Manuel in 2021 saying, I was competed at trials, but I was completely burned out. So I think a lot of the conversation focuses on the injury after the fact. I remember I was so fired up. You know, the Aussies have been on a big upswing as a national team, and I was watching their coaches discuss their performance at the 2016 Rio Olympics, and they were really disappointed. They made no bones about, you know, they came into the meet with a lot of people who were seated first, who were favored, who were, you know, likely to win. And they came out of the meet with less than that. And the quotes from the coaches, the thing that I got really fired up about, the coaches were like, well, you know, we had these athletes prepared, and then mentally they just fell apart. And I'm thinking, like, you're telling on yourself, man. You're a coach. That's your job. Your job is to prepare the athletes for the event. So it would be akin to something you'd never hear somebody at that level say, where they'd go like, yeah, they just didn't do well because I didn't get them fit enough. I just forgot, you know, what can you do? That happens sometimes, right? Just not taking responsibility for it. And I have the sense that that has changed in Australia. Maybe that's just a pet theory of mine for one of the reasons why they're doing better. Somebody, you know, at least maybe even just on the local level, has taken more accountability for that end of it. But I think, and where I'm headed with this is, and where I did head with this was, it's coach's job to develop a plan and be proactive. And, you know, I said earlier that part of what I said was my talk was influenced by what I heard earlier in the weekend. And Steve Magnus was basically leading a discussion among coaches, and man, it got real in there. And I mean that in the best way possible. People were venting. People were letting loose about stuff that they were frustrated on. And I think that that has a ton of value. But when I came in on Sunday, I thought, okay, we've all had this massive vent session, right? We've all realized we're sort of like dealing with some of the same frustrations. What are we going to do with that? You know, what's our plan? What are we going to do next? And in the spirit of not being reactive, you know, at least as little reactivity as possible, how are we just going to have some actions that, you know, aren't necessarily designed to fix a problem? Because I think when you get into a problem-solving space, especially as a coach, you know, you just find yourself mired in solving problems, right? Instead of doing what you do best, which is thinking proactively, planning, and sometimes those plans don't work perfectly. In fact, all the time, they don't work perfectly. But if you, again, you go return to the concept of a training plan, that's where coaches get really dialed in over 30, 35 years because they've been tweaking that stuff, right? To the extent that they really sort of like know the rhythm of the season, they know what to expect, and they know what they're going to do ahead of time. And that's where people really sort of achieve a mastery in coaching. And I think it's possible to, with the more psychologically focused aspects of the sport, I think it's possible to do that. But what it strikes me, and this came out of a conversation I had with another coach that was there, and we had a coach that we knew in common, and I said, like, what'd you think about swimming on that team? And she had a lot of positive things to say. And I said, what didn't you like? Right? Just, you know, shoot me honest. She said, it's just a lot of passive aggressive behavior. And I see a lot of that in coaching. I see a lot of that even in the conversation that we had, right? People were fired up in that meeting. Are they bringing that same passion back to their teams, or are they muting it? Because honestly, they think that if they don't, their butt is going to be out on the street. And as somebody who's been wrongfully terminated, contractually, if you've listened to this podcast, you know my wife doesn't allow me to say I was fired anymore. Somebody who's been wrongfully terminated, believe me, I get it. You can do the wrong thing. You can find yourself out on the street. But as somebody also who spent way more of my life being passive aggressive than I'd like to be, I have to say, we can do a lot better than passive aggressive. We sure can. And I want to talk specifically to that. That's what I was thinking of more than ever, because I think I made the point, and I talked about some specific aspects of positive psychology that you'll be familiar with here on the podcast. But I want to talk more specifically to that passive aggressiveness and some of the things I'm coding as really passive that people are, when you say passive aggressive, it's really something that you're behaving outwardly in a passive way, despite the fact that it's really bothering you. And some of that emotional energy is bleeding through, right? In a very unproductive way. But essentially, in terms of the descriptive actions that you're taking, you know, it's coming across pretty passive. So let me talk about some of the things that I think coaches in general, some traps that coaches fall into in terms of being passive. Number one, this is sort of the most overarching one, is so many of us are compromising on what we think is good for the kids we coach. And as I look at this for mental health, I look at proactivity versus reactivity. I think a lot of the coaches were looking out at the landscape, right? And I heard this loud and clear from coaches. They go, you know, why do athletes that we're coaching seem so much more fragile than they used to be, right? Than they were 5 years ago, than they were 10 years ago, than they were 15 years ago. And I think in response to that fragility, we have sort of been bullied as coaches into backing further and further and further away. And I think that we're only making the problem worse by doing that. Now, it's a perfect reactive solution, right? If you have somebody that your perception of them is that they are fragile, you want to be really careful and circumspect and not do anything to break them, right? But I think it's a big mistake in the sense that, yes, we are seeing broadly among children a higher incidence of mental health problems, but that doesn't mean that coaches should be backing away and compromising on what we know is good for the mental health of the people that we coach. And what is good for them? It's good for them for coaches to be hard on them. And we have to redefine, as part of this, we have to redefine what it means to be hard on athletes. Because unfortunately, something that I've been talking about for, I think I have plenty of credibility because I've been talking about it for, I don't know, 16 years. Unfortunately, in a previous era where there was a lot more sort of natural respect for coaches and their authority and deference to what they were doing, we had a lot of coaches really abuse that trust. Okay, and a lot of the coaches that were the hardest on athletes also used that leeway to do horrible things, sexual abuse, or just otherwise abuse, behave in an abusive way. You know, one of the examples that I used in the meeting, I'll talk about here on the podcast, is you. If you go back in my archives, right, you can find specifically conversations with me and Joel speaking really positively and in an admiration of Terry McKeever. And I've had to deal with the fact that, you know, kids that swam on Cal that were subjected to some of the abusive things that Terry McKeever did have confronted me since then and said, really wish you know, wouldn't say that kind of stuff. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, at doing as she did, which I'm quite certain based on having talked to the people who are on the receiving end of it, endemically telling people that you're coaching, that they're pieces of shit, is abusive and it's bad coaching. And there's no place for it. But I think that a lot of people, other coaches, look at that situation and the waters get a little muddied for them, right? Because they think, well, Terry got fired and therefore I should avoid everything that she did. And we have to be honest and recognize that some of what she did was just good, tough coaching, holding people accountable, right? She had super high standards for people. And that's why I think any time that, you know, you have something like this come out, right? There's people that are speaking, oh, she's so positive in my life. I believe them. They probably weren't told repeatedly that they were pieces of shit. I'm fairly certain of that. Sometimes there are people who were told that who will still say, yeah, it was really positive for me, and that's for them to work out. But I'm guessing a lot of them weren't, but they were pushed hard in terms of the standard for how they were doing things, right? And they were they were made uncomfortable in a lot of situations that had them coming out much stronger on the other end from those interactions. And I think, you know, collectively, as coaches, we cannot back away from high standards, okay, consistency, the expectation that people show up and do the work out of practice, the expectation that people show up, the expectation that you're a good teammate, that you're, that the way that you interact with your coach is respectful and careful and caring. And I think a lot of coaches have been bullied back from that position. And I think it's hurting, I mean, it's hurting coaches, like you can hear it, but I think it's hurting athletes as well. I think it is hurting their mental health. They wouldn't identify it as such because the rest of the conversation is, because the conversation is being dominated by mental illness or not, right? And so anything you do that could be perceived as, you know, oh, he pushed me so hard and that's why I'm depressed. Anything that could be perceived like that, well, that sends a clear signal for coaches to back away from having really high standards when we know that the process of committing to something like that, that the process of putting your whole self into the sport is really good for you. We know it. If we didn't believe that, why are we involved in swimming at all? So we are being passive in terms of compromising on stuff that we know is good for athletes that we coach. Second one. And the second and third ones really blend together. But people are feeling an overwhelming pressure to promote what's going on their teams on social media. And like, I'm not going to be the first person you'll hear ever to go, social media is not real life, right? If you don't think that, I'm not going to convince you. But it's like, it's driving me crazy that most smart people know that being really online is not good for you. It's not good for any of the people involved. And yet, coaches feel this pressure to feed the beast. You know, post more about kids in this group. You're posting about kids in this group and you didn't mention my kid and like, blah, 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 blah. Just say screw it. Just say screw it. Because you know it's not good for you. And you know it's not good for any kids on your team. And stop being passive aggressive about it where you know it's bad, but you're being reactive to people on your team, parents, maybe athletes, who don't know any better, who are yelling at you, right? You should do this. And just because that's loud in your ear doesn't mean that up is down and down is up. You know what's right. Okay? You know what's right. And I said two and three are kind of associated with each other, but I think giving into one way in which there's some passivity, right, is many coaches are giving into low-quality communication. Now, social media, like, you know, mass posting something, I think that's low-quality communication. Like, imagine, let me just give you an example. Imagine the difference in set aside your athletes. Imagine the difference between somebody posting on social media, hey, congrats, coach. You did an amazing job this weekend. Congrats on the results of your team. Okay? Just picture yourself receiving that versus somebody on an individual basis handwriting a card to you. Right? Or you go out to lunch together and talk to them and they look you in the eyes and they go, I'm really impressed by what you did this year. I think we're fooling ourselves sometimes that these systems of mass communication, you know, that technically allow us to communicate to a lot of people at once, really allow us to communicate, right? We all know that very few people read our entire emails, and it is possible to get people to read your emails, right? And if you happen to be somebody who gets people to read your emails, keep sending those emails, because then they're not low-quality communication anymore. If you're getting through to everybody, then it's not low-quality communication. But stop banging your head against the wall. If you're not getting through to people, sending them low-quality communication, then maybe you should think about how to communicate with them with some quality. And it could be frustratingly slow, right? The previous year, and I told this to the audience, you know, Brent Bach was there, one of the most successful club coaches in America out of Wisconsin. And it's obvious to me that he's devoted a lot of his time to building his club up in terms of culture. And when I look back at my time at Jersey Wahoos, I think the thing that I'm most proud of, having been involved in that team, is the team culture, right? That's how you get a gold medal performance out of a 6-lane, 25-yard pool. It's not by brute forcing your way through stuff. You need that culture, right? Because we all know it's at the bottom. But so anyway, Brett's talking about all this stuff, and it's awesome, the cultural stuff he's done. And I highly recommend, you know, he doesn't get out there a lot, but if you get to listen to it, you're going to find it really valuable. And I asked him, I said, how do you communicate this out to everybody? He goes, person to person. Person to person. Now, even on a medium-sized club, if we say 250 to 300 people, person-to-person communication can seem completely overwhelming. And like, I can't even begin to dig in to what's there. But are you making any progress with your emails that nobody reads? Or would you rather make slow, valuable progress actually talking to people? Saving the energy for communication for, if you're the head coach, for talking to all the coaches that you have face-to-face. For pushing parents. One of the things that I really admired, and I said this about working with Paul Donovan at Jersey Wahoos, is, you know, we had the same volume of tough interaction sometimes, especially over electronic communication. He was so consistent and patient about driving people towards meeting him in person at times that were convenient to him, by the way, all the time. I loved it. Be like, come meet me at 2:30 at the pool. And people go, I'm at work. You go, well, you should meet me when I'm at work. That's when I have time to meet. I'm not making time outside of work to meet with you. Right? So he would do that. He would push people even just to get them on the phone versus exchanging, you know, angry emails back and forth. I think at every level and gradation, like, there's just a higher quality level of communication. And the final category where I think coaches are being really passive is we're being really passive in terms of, like, we're like crappy contractors. Okay. And I thought about this on my way home, and maybe contractors is a better example, but I think the one I'm most familiar with, I mean, my wife, Kate, she used to be an architect, and people think of architect as a more glamorous occupation than swimming, but there's so many parallels to swim coaching. And I'll tell you one of them that I observed when she was working in the field of architecture is that very consistently, most architecture firms would do a very poor job of bidding for work, right? So somebody would say like, hey, we want somebody to do this, you know, submit your bids. And, you know, they would send something back. And the bottom line of it would be like, okay, for that work, here's what we're going to charge. Here's how much money we're going to charge. And on the other end of that sausage, you know, the grunt level architect would just be expected to grind away, because now all the amount of money you've got is fixed, but they would give so much valuable time and work and hours in on the other end, which meant that like architects were pretty miserable doing their work. And I think that what we do as coaches is so freaking valuable. And if you go back in this equation, like we are what society needs. Society needs coaches. Kids these days, you know what they really need? They need coaches. We can make the difference for them. So we are super valuable. We're incredibly valuable. And yet we are also, as a profession, doing an abysmal job of communicating to the people that actually pay us what the value of what we do is, how valuable it actually is. And so, writ large, coaches are vastly underpaid. And what does that create? Well, it creates a self-perpetuating thing, right? Because you can see, if I go back to the architecture example, it becomes self-fulfilling, because having people endlessly grind on the other end, you don't get a very high quality of work from them. And then so the, you know, cost per hour goes down, and it's used to justify the next underbid. And, you know, we got presented another thing by Steve Magnus. He had this four quadrant thing, research into parenting, which I 100% co-sign. And essentially the upper quadrant, which is where you want to be parenting-wise, was responsive and I want to say strict, but I don't know that it was strict, but it was like strong boundaries or something, not, you know. And I think that's exactly where you want to be coaching-wise, right? You want to be, when I think responsive, I really think caring. You want to be deeply, deeply caring for the people that you coach. And you want to have tough standards. You want to have really high standards for them. But I think if you can combine those two things, you don't need to worry about being abusive, because everything that you're doing is coming out of a great care for the people that you coach, right? And so telling people that they're a piece of shit, if we go back to the Terry McKeever example, that's incompatible with caring about them. You should not say that to somebody that you care about, in case you needed that piece of information. But being in that upper quadrant is labor intensive. Of course it is. It's hard work to care with all your heart about somebody and to manage those boundaries. I mean, I looked at it and I said, this is probably why I'm not coaching a team, because this is the way I want to do things. But if I, let's just conceivably say, you know, I poured myself like that into my work, you know, be getting shortchanged to be my family. My kids wouldn't be getting me in that upper quadrant. And that was unacceptable to me. And then I think it's incumbent upon us as coaches then to push back, perhaps even in an organized fashion. I'm laughing because I said to somebody, this sounds like, you know, we're forming a union. And I think a lot of swim coaches are not very union-minded people, which is fine. But I think we could be communicating better as a group how valuable the work we are doing is, and therefore what we need to do the job right. From boards, from athletic directors, from everybody else. So this turned into a long podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this. Those of you who were there, those of you who weren't, I had a fun time. And if you want to reach out and contact me, swimbriefpodcast@gmail.com, christycoach.com, christy_coach on Instagram. And finally, check out Pro Swim Workouts. Pro Swim Workouts is a great organization that sponsors this podcast, okay? Founded by a coach. Tons of workouts for you guys to look on there. And you can use code THESWIMBRIEF to get a discount on your Pro Swim Workouts membership. But, you know, more than anything, just go take a look. Browse around the free version and see if there's anything of value there for you, because they've done a lot to support the creation of this podcast. And if you're somebody that loves listening to this, or even likes listening to it, or even like some of my friends, you listen to it as you go to sleep, you know, it's worth checking them out, because they've been so great about keeping this podcast going and keeping me going as somebody who does this podcast. And I really appreciate Pro Swim Workouts. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been my pleasure, and I'll see you again soon.